It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Watch Time. It has been a week since our... Wait, it's been more than a week?
It's been 2 weeks.
Oh my God, 2 weeks. Look, it's been hectic times, a lot of things going on, a lot of videos getting made, a lot of work getting done by Grace. But we're back, and today we're going to be talking about a couple of things that have happened over the last week or so. Obviously, we're going to cover quickly, I think, some stuff about the Travis Scott Astroworld concert that happened. On top of that, we're also going to be tackling the whole idea of YouTubers taking breaks, temporarily leaving YouTube.
Yeah.
Mainly off the back of, obviously, our friend Lachlan, who announced a day or two ago that he is going to be taking a break from YouTube for at least a month, which is very, very epic. We love to see it. But Grace, how's your week?
My week has been pretty good, actually. We were back in the office for the first time since lockdown started back in like June this year. It was so good to be back in the office with everyone. In some ways, it's kind of funny because I actually feel like I work really well alone. Like, I think I'm quite introverted in some ways, and I feel like it doesn't like detract from my motivation to be working from home, but it was really good to be back, like bouncing off everyone's energy. And I think like we're going to be back in the office a couple of days a week, so I'm going to fill those with meetings, and then the days that I'm at home, I'm hoping are going to be super focused. I'm excited for a bloody holiday though. I'm ready.
I'm really ready.
People have like booking holiday anxiety or like PTSD in a weird way. Like everyone's not been able to travel in Australia, and now we are able to travel. And I feel like for the longest time, everyone was like, I'm going to be out of here first day that we can be. And then now I feel like people are like, oh, but I don't know, like, can I plan in advance?
But do I actually want to go? Like, have you ever seen those videos where like two dogs are on either side of a fence and they're acting super aggressive? And then as soon as they pull the petition away, the dogs are like, actually, like, it's cool, bro. And they like, and they walk away.
I feel
like
happy in my home.
That was lockdown and holidays. Everyone's like, I'm going to get out of here, man. I'm going to go places. I'm going to do things. Then lockdown ends and everyone's like, oh, my couch is pretty comfy though.
I have booked a flight. That is not me. I'm gone.
Okay. So I want to do a flight. I want to do a holiday. But the problem is, I don't know. I'm not someone who can go on a holiday by myself. That's not me. I have the utmost respect for people who are able to be like, I'm going to go on a holiday. I'm going to go to Paris and I'm just going to chill in Paris
for a week. Well, you need to ringlead. You need to be on the front foot. You need to be like, hey, I'm going on these dates. Are you with me or are you not with me?
I am. I'm doing some semi ringleading right now. I was chatting to
Vic. My invite must have got lost in the mail.
I think I might have mentioned that this could be happening. I think but you know, I'm also organizing the Click Christmas party, which I think is going to feel like a really nice mini holiday.
Okay.
That's going to feel like it because we're getting a lot of friends down for it. But then also maybe like EDC, which is in March next year over in the US.
Ooh.
That's potentially on the cards, which I'm talking to a few people about.
Okay.
So EDC, speaking of, is not the worst way to segue into topic number one of today, which is...
It's not a great segue, but it is a festival, and we are going to be talking about the Travis Scott Festival that happened on the weekend.
Yes.
Which was, to be honest, fucking awful. Like... Dude, it looked
some of the
horrendous
videos.
And of course, I mean, I think like this needs no introduction. You couldn't have missed this if you were on the internet. And I think we talked to people that are on the internet. Obviously, it was massively overcrowded. 8 people at least died, I think. Hundreds seriously injured.
Another interesting thing that I haven't actually seen covered as much, but I'd love to know how this could possibly happen. One of the people, or I think multiple people that were seriously injured, I think about 8 or so, were like under 16.
It was an all-ages concert.
Yeah, but there was like
is
a 9-year-old.
Fucked?
There was a, no, but surely all ages is like 16 and over.
I'm like, absolutely no way in hell am I letting my 12-year-old child go to a Travis Scott concert.
Insane.
In a
absolutely,
mosh.
Yeah, absolutely
no
crazy.
No way.
But yeah, obviously.
So let's take this back a little bit.
Yes.
When did you first hear about it?
Literally as it happened. I think because it happened late at night, Australia time, or early in the morning. All I know is I was lying in bed browsing Twitter and it came up in the, you know, what's happening feed.
I saw it when it was all still like kind of breaking news and the numbers were like very
up and down.
Initially, it was kind of a lot of confusion. I was like, yeah. was there someone with a gun that did something? Because all it said was 8 people, mass casualty event.
Yeah.
And I was like, was there someone with a gun? And then it was like, was there like some, you know, bad drug that was going around that a lot of people OD'd on? And then... But Crowd Crush, weirdly, wasn't anything that came to mind. And now, obviously, that we've seen all the vision that's come out, one of the biggest takeaways I have is I'm so amazed that this kind of thing doesn't happen more often. Obviously, it doesn't happen because generally the events are run better than this one was, clearly.
Yeah.
But it gives you a window into the amount of the security and the importance, but the amount of it that must be there to try and control a crowd of that size is crazy.
Yeah, I was out to dinner at the time with Ilsa and Tanner. I saw it pop up on Twitter. Lannan was like sending Ilsa a bunch of videos throughout dinner. And I think it like says a lot for how social media just allows news to spread so fast. I mean, social media was so far ahead of like the news outlets at that time. And like Twitter was so far ahead of the news outlets because it's like the news couldn't keep up, but yet there's all these people posting all these videos about what they're actually seeing in real time. And it was bloody terrifying to say the least. And it makes me angry because I feel as though these sorts of things are avoidable. But for example, I feel like you hear a lot of festivals these days, like people ODing. In that instance, I'm like, that is awful. But that person chose to take a drug. And when you take drugs, that comes with potential risks.
There's a risk.
They obviously didn't want that consequence, but they did know they were taking a drug. No one should be going to a concert thinking they could possibly get crushed to death.
Mm.
Like, they're paying for a ticket. And for that ticket, yes, you're paying for the entertainment. You're also paying to be safe when you're consuming that. Someone or some people have been negligent there.
Yeah. It's not like it's not like concerts are a new thing. We've been putting them on for decades.
Right.
And in that, there would have been a lot of learnings about the do's and don'ts.
And this is not like, oops, we let too many people in. Mm. It's like you knew how many tickets you were selling. There was obviously like mass amounts of people that broke down barriers and got in and that sort of thing. But it would have to be thousands of people. Something clearly went wrong there. Whether it was Travis Scott that's accountable or Live Nation that's accountable or the event organizers or whatever. And I was reading these articles about basically like how crowd crushing happens, but also how it's a man-made thing that happens. And it all has to do with how many people you're allowing into a particular area, like how many people per square meter you have. And basically like if you're, you know, two people per square meter, you're fine. It's all good. But as soon as you're getting up to like 5, 6, 7 people per square meter, like you're fucked. And the way that, technical term, and the way that like physics move and people move and that sort of thing, basically if you're up at that like crowd density level, as soon as people start to move, there's nothing people can do.
Like, yeah, there's a really cool video. I don't know if we're going to be able to find it and also put it on the screen, but that shows an aerial view of a crowd at a large event like that. When the crowd gets dense enough, any kind of, you know, a movement here, you watch it echo all the way through this huge crowd from literally like hundreds of meters back. But,
and also just like, how did this happen and then continue to happen? Like, it's not like all of this happened in one moment and suddenly it was like far out. We are way overcrowded here. Like, we need to get people the F out. It's like they would have known, like, as the show was filling up, as people were filling up, and like still pushed ahead with it. Like, what an avoidable thing that happened.
I thought it was very interesting how this is one of the first instances, other than I guess the Gabby Petito one, where I feel like TikTok more and more is becoming a very, like, it's becoming like your the Twitter feed, where there'll be a certain event that's happening. And people now will TikTok isn't just memes anymore. People actively go there as like almost a news source. If you want to see video clips from the event, things that happened, people's like takes on what happened.
Yeah.
Eyewitness accounts, all of that.
TikTok's where it's at.
Most people were telling me that the place they were finding most of their information on it was TikTok.
When I woke up on Sunday morning and I wanted to see more about what had happened, like beyond the news, which is obviously you're kind of getting like recycled versions of the same story. When I like go to the news, like there's only so much the news can say. When I was like, I want to see what actually this was like, I, without a shadow of doubt in my mind, went to TikTok and I went to the hashtag and I was just scrolling the hashtag for like half an hour. And then you're actually seeing, you're getting like an on the ground perspective. I think TikTok is more and more becoming such an important platform just in social media in general. And it's wild to me. When TikTok first really took off, we covered it on Watch Time. We were like, do you reckon it's here to stay, or is it like just another fad platform? I don't think either of us were bullish enough on how important TikTok is as a platform now.
TikTok,
that is the platform that gets most of my time.
TikTok now. And NFTs are two incorrect takes. I still believe that NFTs will fail eventually. I have to. I think TikTok was definitely one that I think we only assumed would fail because of what happened to Vine.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's weird. You see, you know, kind of there is, if you make a mistake, the true sign of insanity is doing the same thing twice and being shocked when it fails the second time around. But TikTok did it differently, and they did it differently enough that they were able to turn it around.
That short form video content is just lends itself so well.
Other interesting takeaway I had, especially stuff around the US elections, you are seeing personal biases a lot more on social media.
Yeah.
But I saw a few things that came out of the Travis Scott concert, which definitely shocked me, which was social media editing clips to fit a narrative that was very... So there was one clip in particular, which, don't get me wrong, I think by and large, there are enough clips of Travis Scott inciting violence and acting in a really kind of despicable way at concerts, which is unforgivable and is definitely a pattern of behavior. But there was one video that it was actually one of the biggest videos that was going around of the concert, which was a hopefully unconscious body and not dead body being carried out by the crowd almost directly beneath Travis Scott as he was apparently continuing to just sing while he could see it, and was, it effectively looked like he was ignoring it. Whereas actually I then saw, by pure chance, I'd seen that video 10 times and then randomly by chance saw the uncut version where it shows the previous 20 seconds where Travis is actually doing a totally different song, sees someone unconscious, stops the concert and says, hey, we need to get like help here now, pick that person up, let's get them up. And apparently he only just starts singing to kind of like fill the void while that person's being carried away, only once he'd drawn attention to it.
I definitely noticed this as well. And I think, like, as I said earlier, I think there's people to be held to account here. But I also think it was really interesting how when I was scrolling TikTok, the narrative was that Travis Scott completely ignored these people, had no idea, or was totally negligent in his response. And then I think it took a day or so for it to come out that I started to see footage where at a couple times, like, he had mentioned that he could see an ambulance and what was going on and like someone was down and that sort of thing. And like, obviously perhaps his response was not proportionate to what it should have been given the level of what was going on.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, it also wasn't at the other end of the spectrum where he did totally nothing. And I think it really, it shows you like what a tidal wave of social media can be as well. And it's like, that just gets picked up. It gets hundreds of thousands of likes and like,
people realize the narrative that social media is moving with that everyone wants to follow. And they'll, even if that narrative might actually be based on reality, people will edit content and opinions to fit that narrative, even more.
Yeah,
exactly. And I actually think there's probably a lot of people who are aware of that clip, the extended one, but aren't going to post it being like, hey, it's actually not that bad, because they know they're just going to get absolutely panned. I think one of the most interesting things that came from it, which I'm keen to get not only your take on, but love to hear in the comments of the podcast what people think. It feels weird and kind of dirty saying this sentence. Travis partnered with BetterHelp to offer free counseling to people from who were at the concert. Now, what I mean when I say it sounds weird and dirty saying that sentence is not the offering free counseling, but normally if you're like, I've partnered with Samsung, or I've partnered with Call of Duty to bring this to you.
A collab.
It sounds like a collab and a branding opportunity.
Yeah.
And granted, we don't know the specific details of how this worked, but the wording I've seen whenever I've seen it talked about is Travis Scott partnered with BetterHelp. Partnering normally means some kind of, you know, and he might not have necessarily personally profited from it, but BetterHelp could have approached him and said, hey, we're willing to offer X amount of dollars in free counseling to people from the concert.
When Elliot mentioned this to me, I thought this was quite interesting, and my immediate response was, oh, so Travis is paying for a free counseling session for everyone that went to the concert. And Elliot was like, no, it says he partnered with BetterHelp. And I thought that use of the word partner was quite interesting because it does hold connotations of at least, if not a paid partnership, like a contra partnership.
Yeah.
Contra meaning like where you're getting something for free. And I just don't know, because the more I think about it, the more I'm like, he's not profiting off this. He couldn't possibly be.
No.
That would just be way too much. He's not getting paid by BetterHelp to do this.
Not a chance.
Not a chance, I don't think. Like, if that leaked, it would be game over.
Yeah, that would be done.
But I also think he's not paying for it. If he was to be paying for everyone who went to the concert to get a free counseling session, I think they may have said that.
Yeah, it would have been Travis Scott is paying for
the
counseling.
Yeah, because they said he's paying for the funeral costs of all the families that have people die. But they didn't say he's paying for the funeral costs and he's paying for a counseling session for everyone.
Yeah.
They said that he's paying for the funeral costs and he's partnered with BetterHelp.
Yeah.
Which I do think is a subtle but important distinction. Look, I don't want to be overly skeptical here, and I'm very aware that oftentimes it's incredibly easy to throw stones at people or companies or whatever when they're trying to do a good thing. And it's impossible these days to do something truly altruistic. When the bushfires happened and companies were saying, oh, we'll donate 50% of our profits, and people were like, you should be donating 100% of your profits, or like, otherwise you're just using this as a marketing ploy because you want to make more money on the other 50%. And while I think it's valid to have those conversations, I also think I don't want.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want that kind of criticism to fear people out of taking any good action at all.
It's weird, yeah, because at the end of the day, people who have gone through a traumatic incident getting the opportunity to access free counseling is absolutely a net benefit to the world.
Absolutely.
The world is better because of this, quote, partnership. But there's just undeniably a weird feeling because a conscious decision was made at BetterHelp that this has happened. And obviously by doing what they're doing, there will be an element of free marketing and conversation around BetterHelp. It's a really, really weird one. And it's not like BetterHelp is out there being like, oh, if anyone has gone through any traumatic experience ever, we'll give you free counseling.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is a net benefit to the world. So I don't know. I think it's super interesting. I don't actually think there is a correct answer. I think ultimately it's good that this happened.
But
I
think it's notable. I think it's something notable. To talk about.
Yeah, it's definitely notable and it's interesting. And I think I would love to hear people's takes.
And then I think the only last point that I would make, which fits into obviously also how brands respond to this sort of thing, is Epic reintroduced Travis Scott's emote from when he had his concert in game. They introduced it before the festival because the festival was happening. As soon as the news started to come out, they actually took the whole store offline for that period.
Yeah.
And they did tweet about it. They noted that it was intentional. It wasn't a glitch and that it would be back up soon. And it was back up without the Travis Scott emote.
Yeah.
I also thought that response from Epic was really interesting because obviously they don't want to come out and be like, we're not supporting Travis, when at the time the news was very much, who knows what's going on? We still don't know. I just thought it was interesting how in that moment Epic chose to respond. I expect that Travis probably gets a revenue share from sales of any emotes or skins that he sells. I can absolutely understand Epic not wanting to be seen to be helping Travis profit during that period. But I just thought it was an interesting response. You know, they addressed it. They said it was intentional that they were taking it down, but they didn't expressly mention Travis, although that was clearly the intended impact.
I think it's like just avoid the controversy, basically. Yeah. Like, why even risk it?
Nothing
just be like,
it.
Look, there's something dramatic going on. We don't want to have that be part of our narrative, so we're just avoiding it.
Oh, just makes me angry how it happened in the first place. Like, you know, Fyre Festival came out not that long ago. Like, how are these things still fucking up this much?
At a certain point, the relationship between security and profit, that shifts one way or the other.
Mm.
And if you get 100 less security guards, you make $1 million more.
Well, you know what's going to be really interesting is the insurance.
I was going to say, I'm guessing it actually won't end up costing Travis that much. Well,
no,
in a career sense.
I actually think it may. Well, in terms of a financial sense, I think someone's going to be paying a big bill.
I think it'll be insurance.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I disagree. Because I think insurance is there for festivals when things go wrong that are beyond their control. But here's the thing. I don't think insurance is going to be paying out if it comes out that they understaffed the event. Insurance companies will pay out if people get hurt, but you've taken all the right precautions. They're not going to pay out if it comes out that, oh, you actually oversold the event, you overcrowded, you didn't have enough EMT staff, you didn't have enough security, and people died. They're going to be like, sorry, mate, that's on you.
It'll be interesting.
Not necessarily on Travis, but maybe Live Nation, maybe the event organizers. But I think there's going to be some massive bills to pay out of this. And they've refunded everyone's tickets that went to the event. That is going to be millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Who's paying for it? I think it's going to be Travis or someone on the team.
And in other news this week, which we thought would be good, we could segue into kind of like a larger discussion on the topic generally, is Lachlan announced that he's going to be taking a 1 month at least break from YouTube. So both streaming and videos.
I thought it was interesting because we also saw Keemstar announce that he's going to be retiring this year. And I think it just brings on an interesting conversation around, like, in the rat race of YouTube, when do you call it a day?
I think that, like, Lockie's clearly been, like, busy for a while, and he's also obviously been putting a lot more time into Power. But, you know, you could see on his YouTube posting that for the last month he's probably done about one video a week or a video every, like, 5 or 6 days, which is a lot less than normal. It is a really interesting question because at the end of the day, I actually can't think of a single YouTuber, really, other than someone who's had a controversy and decided to leave because of it. I can't think of a single YouTuber that said, hey, I'm done. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Other
Jenna
than
Marbles.
Jenna Marbles and Ray William Johnson, which is a very OG one from way, way back in the day. They're the only two I can think of. But to be fair, Jenna Marbles, that was amid a controversy. So I don't think that one counts either. It's very rare that a YouTuber will ever say, hey, I'm kind of done. Which at the end of the day, I actually don't think is that surprising. Because at the end of the day, it's not like you see a lawyer, like it's not expected that a lawyer will do law for 10 years and then be like, okay, cool. I'm done with law now. I'm going to go by. And then they just go off to a different career.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I think, you know, and that's the same with a lot of people who work in TV. They're TV entertainers and they do that their whole life. YouTube, I think, is definitely, it's as draining a job as you make it, but it's definitely a very emotionally intense job because you don't have a salary or any guarantee of performance.
Yeah.
So because of that, there is a general tendency to work pretty intensely and do longer hours because you feel like if you don't, you're underselling yourself.
Well, it's like you work for yourself, you know? I think it's kind of similar to running a business. Like, in a small way, I feel similar where it's like, how do I take a break really where I'm not thinking about it? I always have to be thinking about it because no one else is thinking about it.
Like, I think that's actually one of my favorite things. And I think it's definitely something I've noticed that I think Lockie and I have both gotten better with. I think definitely there was this mental sense in, especially, you know, to rewind to the first year or two of Fortnite.
Yeah.
You could not miss an upload ever. Or you would, it just wasn't acceptable. It wasn't okay. I remember literally, you know, like going over to the UK. I forget what I went over for, but like was on the plane on this like, 18 hour flight. Just freaking out and then getting into the cab at the airport and trying to get to the Sideman house as quick as I could because I knew there was a setup there. And when there was a setup, I could record a video and I could get more content.
Yeah.
And it an absolute rat race. I do think one of the great things, though, when you kind of grow your channel and you become, and you've been doing it for like as long as Lockie and I have, which is what I think Lockie's been going 8 years, I've been going seven. You do kind of eventually, it takes years, start to realize that, wait a second, no.
Yeah.
I can miss an upload. It's fine.
The sun will still shine.
The sun will shine. And the trade-off where in the early years of YouTube, you're willing to put your mental health on the lowest priority and put productivity at the highest, eventually swings back the other way.
Yeah.
And then you're able to be like, you know what? No.
That's good.
Yes, I will make less money this month, but will I ultimately be a lot happier and healthier by taking that break and putting less pressure on? Absolutely.
That's so worth it.
That is a trade-off that I'm now willing to make. And I think that that's definitely something that comes, it takes a long time to get there.
Definitely.
But I think if you look at pretty much any veteran YouTuber who's been going for, say, over 6 years, almost all of them are a lot more comfortable either lowering their upload rate or even taking a break for a week or two.
Yeah.
I think that's something that you learn to become comfortable with, which at the end of the day is going to make your content better.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point to make, that it's going to make your content better.
Yeah.
Like, if you've ever tried to just work when you're so exhausted, you just can't do it. Like, what you're putting out is not good.
No.
I feel that way. Like, I'm not even in, like, as creative a role. And I think there's something very powerful, like, beyond taking a break. I think it's really interesting that Keem is calling it a day. He's saying, he's like, yeah, I'm going to quit.
Keem is in a unique position, though, because he is able to step back from his channel without fully retiring it as an income stream.
True.
So that's...
But I still think...
It's still a huge decision.
There's a massive risk there. And I think it's really... It's like there's almost... I don't know. I kind of like the idea that someone's just like, you know what? I'm done. And they're calling it. And they're not just letting it like die a slow, sad death.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I don't know. I think there's different ways to call it. I think there's, you know, where if your YouTube channel actually dies and your viewership literally goes down to, you know, say the point where YouTube no longer is economical as a job in any way is when you're probably at like the 30,000-40,000 view mark.
Yeah.
Per video or less, depending on what your production level is. But, you know, with a lot of people, Keemstar definitely, you know, Lachlan is still easily pulling 1 million views on every video. Like, that's by no means a retiring level.
No.
I personally think, and I think the way, I think what most YouTubers eventually come to realize is that, shockingly, you do what most people do with any job, which is once a year or once every few months, you say, hey, I'm taking a week off. I'm taking 2 weeks off. I'm going to go away.
What a concept.
Maybe they're super organized and they've worked hard to get extra videos done to post while they're away. But at the end of the day, I do think that is the point most YouTubers come to.
Yeah.
Which is realizing that it takes a long time. It takes years of building up the confidence to be able to miss uploads and convince yourself that, no, your channel isn't going to completely die.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at what, you know, it's... And kind of like anyone who's gone through a period of super intense work, after a period of intense work, you probably want to have a little bit of a bigger break. Lockie's just finished or is about to finish his 2-year streaming contract. So he has been streaming for years while also trying to keep up with regular uploads. And if you're someone who isn't natural to streaming,
yeah,
it is hard. I look at people like XQC who put out 20-hour streams.
Dude.
It blows my mind.
No way.
But he's finally got to the end of a pretty mammoth couple of years of doing live streaming while also doing daily uploads, while also starting Team Power.
Yeah.
And I definitely think at the end of a run like that, you've earned a break.
I think, 1,000% you've earned a break.
Yeah.
What are you going to do at the end of the year?
I don't know.
Do you feel that need right now?
I actually don't. I find that right now... I think the only reason I would like to take a break would be to reinvigorate kind of like that, I don't know, effectively bring in something a bit fresh to YouTube. Because I think that right now I actually feel really comfortable with my workload. I'm probably posting 5 videos a week, doing my streaming hours and, you know, ticking along. But I do feel like I would love to get back to that feeling I had, you know, 3 years ago, where you're just trying to like crank every dial you know, up to 11, you're trying to find...
You're cruising right now.
Yeah, I'm cruising. I'm like, and don't get me wrong, I don't feel like I'm being like, I don't care about my videos. Because if I didn't care, I would do 7 videos a week and just upload crap.
Yeah.
But I do think that it is, after playing the game for so long, it's harder to get excited about the content you put out.
It's less fresh.
But also not an excuse. So I reckon I'm going to plan a 2 to 3 week trip sometime between January and March next year. And I'm going to enjoy it. And it's going to be amazing. But I'm definitely, whenever I see, because I've got a lot of friends who, you know, now are able to chill back a bit more, who've been doing YouTube for a while. And they'll just be like, yeah, just going to go to Europe for 3 weeks and just, I don't know, travel. And like one of the really cool things is like we've got friends in so many different cities. Yeah. And when you travel, it can be super fun. Like I can go to the UK and like stay with Vic and see his new house. And that would be awesome. I can then pop over to Amsterdam, see Geordie Quebblecop and be like, and see his apartment, which yeah. I have heard is very, very cool. Geordie coming through any month now. I'll see you then. You haven't invited me, but I'm going to be there. But that kind of thing, there's so many cool travel opportunities.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a very invigorating thing.
1,000%. You don't want to like waste all your time doing the work and not enjoying the fruits of your labor.
Agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Goodbye.
Adios.
I'm also going to be out. I'm planning to travel a lot next year. I just want to like not put limits on myself. It's been a while. It's been a long time since like a proper holiday.
Yeah.
Where it's like there's been no work. I actually can't remember even when.
Yeah.
I'm going to the Caribbean.
Just going anywhere tropical. Going anywhere where I am not making YouTube videos. No. That's the idea.
I'll catch you with a mimosa in my hand at 3 p.m.
Although, you know, actually my ideal holiday, and I feel like don't want to go in circles on my holiday for this whole podcast. So we can end on this. My ideal holiday is a holiday where I can go away for say a month, and then maybe one day a week I have access to a grade recording setup. And that way it's the perfect way to balance my holiday vibe and my holiday spirit with just enough content that I don't get any anxiety about YouTube. That's the dream.
Just a touch of anxiety.
Yeah, because as much as you might want to be like, no, I've got the confidence to go on a holiday, there's still that niggling little thing in the back of your mind. And it's almost like it's great to just be able to push that out like once a week and then back to mimosas on the beach.
Lucky you've got friends with very good quality setups in many places in the world. Dude, the go dream. To Monaco.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's Monaco?
What's his name's in Monaco?
Who?
Name.
Jelly. Oh, Jelly. Yeah. Jelly is in Monaco. Yeah. I don't know if I know Jelly well enough to be like, hey, Jelly, I'm coming to stay at your house. He'd be like, who the fuck is this? No. Nice like, guy. He is. He's very, very, very lovely guy. Yeah, Monaco. I hear they've got, is it a Grand Prix or a boat show?
Both.
Love
at
it.
At the same time, I think.
At the same time, even better. I'll see you there, Jelly. I'm not invited, but I'm coming to your doorstep.
All right, guys, thank you so much for watching this week's episode of Watch Time. We are grateful to be back, and tell us any of your thoughts on any of the topics today below. But other than that, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.